Hello, and welcome to Long Time No See, the podcast. Each week, we'll be pairing two blindfolded comedians who've agreed to sit down with a mystery guest. I'll be putting them on the spot with a series of questions about their careers, lives, and opinions. Without further ado, please remove your blindfolds and introduce yourself.
Hey, I'm Michael.
Hi, Andrea.
I have to be honest with you, I am so relieved to see it's you.
Do you have any irrational fears? What's the worst fad you were into? Is there any job that you would be terrible at?
Underwater welder?
Don't say that about yourself.
Do you guys have any useless talents?
I kicked one of those delivery robots.
What? You kicked one?
Yelling. I kick those all the time.
They have names on them.
Good.
I can make smoke come out of my mouth with nothing.
Do it.
You want to see it?
What the f***? Are you a dragon?
Out now, Long Time No See, the podcast, season 2. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply, in-app only.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
Consequence Podcast Network.
And welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org, Consequence, and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thanks for checking us out. Hopefully you're subscribed. If you're not already, you can do so anywhere you're listening from: Spotify, Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcasts from. You can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With, and please do give this series a rating, leave a review while you're at it. Those always help out so much. I've had some great guests drop by lately. Soft Cell were here, Orchestral Maneuvers in the Dark. We talked with Sabrina Impacciatore. You know her as Esmeralda in The Paper, the Office spinoff that's out on Peacock. Lizzie Hale, lead singer of Hailstorm, was here. Wayne Coyne of The Flaming Lips talked with the cast of Alien Earth on FX, including Timothy Oliphant, Sydney Chandler, David Risdahl, and Noah Hawley, the showrunner, director, writer, creator. Devo dropped by, Black Eyed Peas, DJ Shadow, Gendy Tartakovsky, Amy Berg. She did the It's Never Over Jeff Buckley documentary that's out now, and They Might Be Giants. That's just an example of what you get when you subscribe to the Kyle Meredith With podcast. That's me, Kyle Meredith. Today, it's a full house. We're talking about the movie The Man in My Basement. Legendary actor Willem Dafoe. He's been in everything from the Green Goblin in Spider-Man to Vincent Van Gogh in At Eternity's Gate. He'll join Corey Hawkins from Straight Outta Compton, Anna Diop from Titans, and first-time feature director Nadia Lateef. Now, the movie, The Man in My Basement, it's actually based on the novel from Walter Mosley. And they're turning this psychological thriller where race and trauma and grief haunt every frame. The story follows Charles Blakey, played by Corey Hawkins, a man on the verge of losing his ancestral Sag Harbor home, who agrees to rent his basement to the mysterious Aniston Bennett's William Dafoe for the summer, only to find himself pulled into a chilling reckoning with history, family ghosts, and the root of all evil. We're going to start with Willem Dafoe. He's going to dig into acting as pretend courage, why first days on the set still terrify him, and how genre lets hard truths sneak up on the audience. So let's get into this, talking The Man in My Basement. It's Kyle Meredith with Willem Dafoe.
Hi, Kyle.
Pleasure to talk to you. Congratulating you, I'm sure, along with everybody else on this this incredible story here.
Great. Thank you.
Like, so when you see a script like this, just because there's so many layers to this, the personal and the bigger things, like, I don't know, what comes to your mind? Is this, can I do this? Or is it a, how can I do this?
Yeah, it's how can I do this? Can I do this? Do I want to do this? Does this represent a proposal for an adventure? Am I going to learn something? Am I going to be engaged? Am I going to be kicked in the pants? You know, all those things.
And what was the answer to that? Were you kicked in the pants?
Yeah, a little bit. I'm always kicked in the pants. You know, every time. Every time. It's hard for someone to believe. But, you know, no matter how many times you do it, you always at the beginning say, how does this go? You know, and I'm grateful for that.
Yeah, it's interesting, too. I'm hoping this will be clear enough to you, because I've watched some of the other interviews just about acting and about how you approach a role. And the way you talk about acting reminds me of the way Keith Richards or Mike Campbell talk about guitar playing. Like, there's this.
Okay, cool.
It doesn't feel like they're overthinking it, but they've got the tools already there, I guess. Uh-huh. You never seem like you're overthinking something.
Oh, God. I think it's human nature to overthink something. But, you know, I try to always keep on going back to, you know, the basic things that I know, and then the refinement, you know, gets expressed differently each time. But there's certain things that I always go back to. So I guess that keeps me about overthinking it, because performing is all about doing things. Mm-hmm. And I don't talk a lot about it. You know, you create a background and experience by doing things. And it's all about call and response and making a gesture and then making another gesture. I don't think about interpreting or what I have to say. I'm much more concentrated on the experience of the doing.
Well, you do a lot. There's so much a part of this movie. You know, you're trapped in a cage and the darkness and the light and the way that plays with that. I'd like to ask, I guess, about the genre, too, because we're seeing, especially in psychological thrillers and horrors, I guess they've always been able to tell stories, but there's something about it. I mean, you know, we look at Black history right now, you know, with movies like Us and Sinners and something. I mean, like, do you think genre helps tell the story? That feels like an obvious way to ask that question, too obvious.
No, I think that's... You know, I can't quite identify what this is genre-wise. I guess you'd say psychological thriller with a little horror spice in there. But yes, I think there are certain conventions that can propel things, and then you can that can make people relax and in how they look at something, because they have the comfort. It's just like what narratives do sometimes. Narratives let people relax because there's a familiarity, there's a movement that they can hop on. But you can't let them just stay on the narrative. Otherwise, you know, it's just a diversion and they sort of get in a trance, you know? But I think genre invites sometimes, and people that may not want to deal with some of the themes in the movie will sneak up on them as they're kind of enjoying the aspects of the genre that they respond to, then all of a sudden this other stuff will creep up on them. So I think it can be a vehicle for some interesting discourse about very important things sometimes.
And we'll be right back right after this.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Wondering if dangerous contaminants are in your home's water? Get Leaf Home Water Solutions today. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make it safer and healthier. Leaf Home Water Solutions is offering a free in-home water test. Just visit leafhome.com/water to schedule yours. With results from their advanced digital testing, Leaf Home Water Solutions can design a whole home system and expertly install it in as little as one day. With Leaf Home Water Solutions, you can feel confident that each drop of water from every tap and appliance is cleaner and safer for you and your family. We can't live without water, But we can take actions today to make our family's water safer with Leaf Home Water Solutions. Schedule your free home water test today at leafhome.com/water and save 15% on all home water treatment systems. That's leafhome.com/water for your free home water test and 15% off. leafhome.com/water.
Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Willem Dafoe.
Well, and I mentioned that, you know, seeing you in that, like in that cage, and God, there's that, I won't give away the scene, but there's the one scene where you're in it, man. You are deep in it. Sure, you can act, but where do you go? Like psychologically?
I pretend. That's what I do. I pretend I'm the guy. That's all.
But I mean, that's acting, right? Like that's,
yeah. Little kids, they're deep in it sometimes. You know, I play the cop, you play the robber. Let's go. They're in it.
That's what I meant by the Keith Richards thing right there. Is like, I just write the riff, man. And yeah, I think that's what's because I, like, I'm not an actor in that way. But what scares me about that is thinking of going through that situation of this film specifically and what that would do to my own psyche. To inhabit.
You mean as a person, like if you imitate these things or you pretend these things, they might hurt you yourself.
That's what it feels like it would do to be in that moment, you know, time and time again, scene after scene.
You're protected, you know. If you can survive this stuff in pretend, you start to get the illusion that you can survive it in life, you know. So it becomes a little bit, once again, it becomes a vehicle for a certain kind of courage, because really every time you work on a film, you're kind of like, how does this go? Can I pull this off? You always start with a place of insecurity. First days on a set are miserable for me because I'm nervous. You'd think that after doing this many times, you'd be like, I got this, but it's never like that. And as I say, I'm thankful for it because that's what keeps you alive, and that's what keeps you on it and not just sleepwalking through stuff that you already know. So I guess, you know, using your guitar example, it's probably the same thing, you know? You can play a song a million times, but if you know how to enter it every million times, then you're a musician.
Yeah, right. So kind of veering in that direction still, like, does it change the experience, like, for this to be a two-hander for you?
Yeah, it does. I mean, you know, the conditions of the story and the conditions of the shooting, whether it's a big budget, low budget, quick shoot, little shoot, new director, old director, you know, all that stuff gets factored in and gets expressed in how it conditions what you're doing. But the clear thing about this is, you know, it's much is hung on the text. Mm-hmm. Much more than usual, I'd say. And the shooting is quite direct for the most part because the emphasis is on, the text is very strong in this.
Some of those lines, I think I wrote down so many, but, you know, like, people die every day. Like, there's a lot of good lines in this. There's something about that one that just hangs with me, you know.
Okay. It's all the context of the speeches. It's sometimes.
Sure.
The things that are expressed are a little prosaic, but given where they sit in the speeches, they kind of sing sometimes.
For you to be as busy, I was looking at it, 5 movies last year, 7 the year before, 6 this year. And I think I'm going back to what I was talking about beforehand about, you know, having a character sit with you like that. Like, are you just visiting the characters? Like, that's just so many people to inhabit in quick succession, I guess.
It is, but you're activated by the camera, and the situation makes the character. You know, characters are revealed through the actions and the situation. And when those situations and the environment to make that character be born is gone, the character goes away, too. I mean, you carry all these characters around. You do, too. You're capable of all kinds of behavior. Anyone's capable of any kind of behavior. And you're just willfully tapping in to those things and trying to let them emerge. I mean, you know, you think of the body, all the functions that happen without your volition, you know, they happen without you. So your job is kind of to direct the ship, and then the ship will, go in the right direction.
Yeah. Well, kudos to you and the whole team for what you all did here. Again,
okay,
just good. What a brilliant movie. And thank you so much for taking the time to talk about it.
Sure. Thanks.
Right. And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith. We're talking about The Man in My Basement. Now we turn things over to Corey Hawkins, Anna Diop, and Nadia Lateef. In fact, Nadia is going to reflect on making her feature debut and weaving her own story of loss into Mosley's text, while Corey details playing Charles's transformation opposite Defoe in a basement where time itself bends. Anna speaks to how horror and thriller connect with Black history in ways straight drama can't. The Man in My Basement, it's Kyle Meredith with Corey Hawkins, Anna Diop, and Nadia Lateef.
I got to tell you, and Nadia, I'll start with you. Congratulations on your first feature, because what a hell of a statement. There's a quote that you'd said about finding your story within the author's work and pushing that through, which is the obvious place to say, why this story?
I think, you know, it's no first-time film director thinks they're going to take on the work of a literary titan, but also, why the hell shouldn't you if you find yourself within it? And, you know, I'd read Walter's book over 20 years ago, and it had just, like, stayed with me for decades. But I think then when you get to the job of adapting it, you can't kind of be overawed by that. You have to go, who am I, what is my personal experience, and how do I, you know, find that in the story? Because every film has to be personal. You cannot make a film that is not personal to you. And actually, you know, it's actually quite emotional things in the story that are very personal to me. Like, you know, the idea of, you know, William's character and Corey's character being these two who have no families left, mm-hmm. and what that means. And I think about my own terror at the day that I will lose my parents. It is something that will happen to all of us. And that's like a really simple thing. But that totally guided me into an interpretation of Charles, which I think is quite different from the novel, actually, of being somebody who is actually completely overwhelmed by his grief. You know, it's like, you can sort of normalize it by going, well, we're all going to lose our parents. And it's like, yeah, but it's okay to not get over that. It's okay for that to be like a thing that actually knocks you back and that you can't stand up from. So then it began to influence everything. It influences how he behaves with his friends, how his friends treat him, how his neighbor treats him. It's like, this is somebody who's so clearly racked by grief still, even though I think when we discussed it, his mother's been dead for over 10 years.
Yeah.
But it's like, it's fine. You don't have to get over that. You know, similarly with everything that happens with his uncle, you know, I really felt like, I kind of feel, not to speak for you two, but like everybody's kind of got that uncle, or there's like somebody in the periphery mm-hmm. of their life where you're just like, yeah, we don't love him. You know, I had an uncle who used to like flick his cigarette butts mm-hmm. at me. Do you know what I mean? Like, and it's like, you know, he's not a nice guy. But it's like, again, what if that became just like a much bigger thing for him? You know what I mean? Like, thinking of like, actually, you know, the ways that we treat boys and we try and make them tough and we kind of cut them down, you know, because it's supposed to strengthen them. What if that wasn't all right? So, you know, there are kind of bigger political things that obviously kind of where I reside within the story, about the contrasting of African-American history and African geopolitics and all of those. But actually, the things that told me how to tell the story were the emotional things, because I think it has to be first and foremost like a character-driven story. Because I also think that actors can't play ideas. Like, they can't play, you know, there is a place for like agitprop political cinema, of course there is, but actually I think it's like, when you're playing a scene, you're not thinking about like, but what does this mean?
Right.
The historical, you know, it's like, I've got an actress friend who is a brilliant woman, and whenever she starts something, she goes, okay, what's the last thing that happened, and when did my character last eat? Do you know what I mean? Like, because it's like, those are the kind of really simple, you know. So like, we talked a lot about the fact that like, Charles hasn't got anything in his fridge at the beginning of the film. He's eating like day old potato chips. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Like, these are the things, you know. Yeah, he's going to go and try and get that job because he does not know where his next meal comes. And those are the really strong things that you're playing scene to scene, not, you know, what is my psychology?
And it's interesting to hear you talk about that, because the layers, it's, like, especially when you walk away from this movie and, you know, for me at least, I can say, you know, like, thinking about it for days afterwards, and just as you're talking about, you know, these very personal things to the bigger things. I mean, Anna, you know, your character brings in, of course, we're talking about race and trauma and everything that's come along with Black history. And when you look at, I don't know, maybe it's a genre at this point. You know, we're seeing movies like Sinners and Us, and I think about the way Black history is being talked about through psychological thrillers, through horror, and it seems to be connecting so much more than otherwise. I mean, is that
are you talking about the use of genre to tell these stories?
Yes. Sorry if I'm not saying that plainly enough.
Trauma. Yeah, I hear you. I think the reason they're more effective is, I think they just lure people in a different way. You know, a straight up drama, people are expecting a very tedious or, you know, nobody wants to be lectured to. So genre gives, I think, filmmakers, creatives, a way to get really important topics across while kind of putting it in this more entertaining way. And it also, I mean, you can speak to this, but it seems like it gives filmmakers more free range to kind of unpack.
It's a bigger palette. Yeah, I mean,
you just have more paints in the bag,
basically.
Yeah, so I think it's really beautifully effective in that way.
I think also it feels accurate. Like, it just feels like for a lot of Black people, you know, I mean, you know, I remember when we first started talking, you know, we were talking about sort of experiences through, like, the Black Lives Matter movement and how that had changed things in our, like, personal life. You know, like, we'd been through this kind of very kind of radical few years of, you know, more Black and brown people died of COVID than, you know, like, there's a lot of stuff that you're like, this is just sitting in the background of my experience of the world as Black people. But I just feel like when I was getting ready to, when I was writing the film, you know, I was reading, like, a lot of kind of post-colonial fiction, and I was reading Adam Hochschild's book, King Leopold's Ghost, and I think that there is a, unfortunately, but, like, let's be really honest about how history operates, there is a violence and an ugliness to history that you have to, like, reckon with. And I think in a weird way, when you tell, you know, when you read about, like, Leopold in the Congo and you read about the things that the Belgians did to the Congolese, it is the stuff of nightmares. Mm-hmm. It is the stuff of, like, intense cruelty because there's no cost to it. They could do whatever they wanted, do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so actually I think when you see that, when you tell it in a film, spinning it into that kind of, like, horror, thriller, dark space feels appropriate, actually. Mm-hmm. You're like, yeah, that is what life is like for a lot of us. Do you know what I mean? And
history is more, what do you say? History is more scary than, or like, our,
than sure.
History's a shit show.
Yeah, I mean, like,
you know, Corey, while we're here and everything, I mean, here you are playing someone who's really coming to some kind of terms with reckoning as we go along, and seeing him transform over the movie. Like, a lot of movies aren't shot, obviously, in sequence and in order. What was that process like for you? Because there's so many different moments of these realizations of everything, you know, that arc that I guess you had to play.
Yeah, shout out to Prince on the wall. I just credit Nadia for giving, especially a lot of those scenes in the basement, giving us that runway to be able to tell that story in sequence. Mm. Because it would have been incredibly hard to try to take that out of sequence. And I think it also feels a very different cinematic language than his sort of upstairs life. And in that basement, Charles can kind of be, for Aniston, whoever he chooses to reveal himself to be to Aniston. Mm-hmm. And then he can take whatever that is that Aniston offers up and take that into his life upstairs and see how that manifests, because he's a man who sort of is like water and sort of shapes to whatever, you know, at this particular moment in his life. I don't think Charles was always like this. And I think so we meet him in a very, like, very specific moment in his life that can be uncomfortable to sit in. It was certainly uncomfortable for me as an actor to sit in, but uncomfortable as it should be for the viewer to sort of watch him go through this and to see what that motor ultimately ends up becoming. I mean, it's beautiful to watch him get more curious about the world through that lens.
I think it's interesting. We talked a lot. Like, me and Corey were there being, like, plotting out every scene of the film and being like, what day is this? You know, how long? You know, what is that really specific work that you have to do? And then on the flip side, Willem was just like, doesn't matter to me because yeah. I'm, you know, yeah. But, and he says in the film, he's like, I have no idea what day it is. It's only what you tell me it is, which put them in a very specific, yeah. Like,
I was if very Corey, like...
Yeah, yeah, and if Corey came down in a different costume, it was like, okay, different day, because that's the only thing that tells me. Definitely. And so there became a sort of interestingness about, like, time operating completely differently in the film for the two of them, but also for us. You know, and it affected all sorts of things. It affected the sound design, it affected the lighting. But actually, I began to sort of really enjoy that. And then obviously that begins to get used as a kind of threat of, like, when are they going to see each other the next time? And I've said this earlier, but I did quite a lot of reading around how time and space is kind of impacted by being underground or in deep space. Like, I was sort of fascinated, you know, I was like, read books about people who go on very long submarine missions and be like, how it totally skews, if you don't see natural light, like how that actually messes with your brain. Or if you read Samantha Harvey's book, Orbital, which is about the people living in the International Space Station, again, just like what impact that has on your body when time doesn't operate in the same way on you. Sorry, that's a little bit metaphysical for this era of the day.
No, I love it because luckily you've answered some of my other questions about the lighting, because it's very noticeable the way you play with the lights and the colors and the angles and everything. And I know I've got to wrap this up, so I'll just, again, compliment you all, because it is brilliantly shot and brilliantly acted and with the theater people. And I do wish I'd been able to ask about the maggot wrangling, because that sounds like something.
Real job and 158 maggots. They had to count them in and out with a little clicker in case one got left behind. You can't leave no maggot left behind.
Insane.
No maggots were harmed in the making of this film.
Yeah, exactly.
No. Congratulations to you all. Thank you for doing the work that you've done.
Thank you.
And there we have it. Thanks to Corey Hawkins, Anna Diop, Nadia Latif, and Willem Dafoe. The Man in My Basement in select theaters now will be on Disney Plus at some point soonish, I expect. Thanks to you for checking out the episode. Hit that subscribe button before you get out of here. That way you can keep up with all the interviews that I put out, just like this one, Spotify, Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcasts from. You can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. Please do give the series a rating and leave a review while you're at it. After that, you can head over to WFPK.org. That's where I do a show Monday through Friday, starting 6 p.m. Eastern. It's 4 hours of classics from the 80s and 90s. You get the best in new music, bonus interviews, lots of music news as well. In fact, one of my recent episodes featured some classics and favorites from Nat King Cole, The Who, John Prine, Common, Pete Rock, INXS, Garbage, R.E.M., Prince, Jack Johnson, John Batiste, Leon Bridges, Stereophonics, and my interviews with Chrissy Hynde of The Pretenders, Italian actress Matilda De Angelis, and Keith Powers of Uglies. That's what you get when you tune in weeknights starting 6 p.m. Eastern at WFPK.org. Consequence has your music and film news. You can also find me on any of the social media sites. The address is always at Kyle Meredith. I do hope you like and follow along. That does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply, in-app only.